We'll get on to questions, and we'll stop talking about compasses. Jay says, how is Prime doing? I'm quite tired right now. I'm having one of those days where, like, I know that snacks are just going to appear and I can't fight it. So I'm probably going to buy a tub of ice cream and disappear inside it at some point. What's the dog doing? The dog was asleep really cutely, but they've just moved to my lap and they're now asleep on my lap, which usually isn't a problem, but, like, it means that, like, I'm more aware of what my legs and my lap is doing, and so it does, like, I end up with cramp because I'm trying to, like, hold stable than I would have if there's no dog there. So eventually I get cramp and then the dog has to move. Anyway, Zenry says, now the Resonite mod loader isn't hiding its own assembly more. I'm curious if you have some catalytics that keep track of version strings. I think we do somewhere, we just haven't looked at them and it's not a priority for us to look at them. Metrics.yellowdogman.com might tell you that. I can't remember. If it doesn't, then J4's stat site probably does, and metrics.yellowdogman.com could be edited to do that, but I don't think it's useful. Ozzy says, on the plus side of networking, how are you feeling about the fact Resonite can be enjoyed by people across the world in the same session now, given the improvements to the protocol? How are you feeling is like a weird question. The answer is I don't know, man. I'm so many coffees into the day. It's good, I guess. It's another instance of, like, let us cook, right? You know, we know what we need to do, we just need to do it. Moving forwards, Alpha Neon says, with how quickly the team was able to get the header server to .NET, would it be possible at all to update the graphical client as well to .NET, a user compatibly British? Yeah, that's all covered in the performance update. We're doing a bunch of stuff to cover that. We can only go to .NET for the entirety, like the entirety, holistically, of the graphical client once we're off Unity. Unity's sort of the bottleneck there. One of the ideas is to move parts of Resonite to run in their own process, and those could dog you falling off. Hold on, there we go. And run their own process, at which point they can run whatever sort of framework we want. So we could run those processes as .NET 8 processes, and they would just communicate back with a main process which is running inside the Unity runtime. There's more about that on the GitHub as well. Dog, you can't eat that. It's a paperclip. Electrona says, do you know if Resonite has been seeing crashes on the 14th gen i7 9s? No, the only reason we'll be able to do that is if we aggregated log files. I was looking into a service called Loki. It's made by the same people who make Grafana, which we run for metrics.yellowdogman.com. But Loki can, like, ingest log files and then run reports and alerting on them. And I was just wondering, like, what if every single, like, log file that was submitted to a GitHub report went into Loki as well? Like, would there be good information there? Like, examples is, like, let's say, 50% of all new GitHub bugs for, like, a week have a new exception in them. It might not be, like, the subject matter of the bug report, but it might be that, you know, 5 or 6 different bug reports all have this log file that contains a particular exception that represents a bug. If they're all in Loki, my understanding is that we'd be able to configure that and say, like, hey, there is an increase in log files which have this in it. You might want to look at that. And I think that might be cool. I don't know, because I haven't had time to look at it. But I think that might be good. We could also do something there where, like, instead of going to GitHub to submit your log files, we somehow, like, automatically submit them to Loki or something. I don't know, but, like, I just want to play around with it, get it up and running and take a look at it. VitaRexa says, I downloaded the headless today, moved my config file from my old headless to the new one, and it is crashing. Should I attempt to check file integrity and move straight to re-downloading the headless? I should start with a log file. So when people download stuff or reinstall stuff, they often just, like, delete the problem. If you read the log file, or at least open up a GitHub issue with that log file, or even just ask in various channels for people to take a look at your log file, there's often, like, a learning item there. Like, maybe your JSON file is incorrect. Maybe there is something wrong with the actual headless and you might need to reinstall it. But we can find out for certain by taking a look at the log file. We cannot find out by certain if you just reinstall it. It doesn't solve the problem, it deletes the problem. I haven't reinstalled Windows for, like, 10 plus years at this point. My computer's screaming at me for me to do it, but I won't on principle. Like, anything that's broken, I should fix it. Screener says, how goes the process of performance optimizations? You can check the update notes for our current progress on that. I am not doing performance and optimizations right now, although I did save 5 seconds in the unlikely event that there are no bridges present. You'll save 5 seconds in trying to use bridges, but that's nothing to do with performance. That was just like a funny side effect there. But yeah, you could read the update notes there. Like, I'm not that involved in it. Ozzy says, no bridges is likely present during pre-release. Yeah, I actually forgot about that. During one of the, like, LNL test periods, we had... oh, please don't say you've timed out. No, it hasn't timed out. Good. One of the LNL testing periods, we had bridges running, I think, Fruxx's home computer, and the power went out whilst he was asleep. So it's likely in pre-release, yeah. There's just, like... I don't know if you've looked at a log file recently, but, like, as of, like, I don't know, this month or so, there's just a lot more information about when connections fail, and that's mostly what I've been doing. Moving forwards to Zenru says, how's the team responded to your rollout of Nextcloud? Any particular reason you switched to using Nextcloud? We were always using Nextcloud. It just had a bunch of issues because it wasn't installed correctly. I've resolved those, and now it's got a lot better. The difference as well is that I've started clamping down on privacy related matters and stuff like that, as has the team. It's like a good thing that we need to do. And one of the complex things of using Google Docs is, unless we have a business account with Google Docs, like a workspace business account, it means that the relationship between Google and the document owner and the document creator are established on a personal level, not an entity level, which makes legal challenges kind of strange, right? It also makes challenging things such as, like, let's say, for example, like a prominent member of the team left and they had a bunch of Google Docs that were useful. Like, a good example might be the Mentor Matrix. That's the big spreadsheet that the Mentor team uses to track, like, who's a mentor. If the person who owns that spreadsheet, so I don't know what Google account it is on, if their Google account got deleted or revoked or they lost interest in Resonite and they just vanished, like, we wouldn't be able to, like, pull that out. If we had a Google workspace, like, client relationship as a business entity, then there would be stuff we could do there to sort of retain stuff, both on a legal point of view, but also on a sort of, like, administrative point of view. It might be like, hey, you've left the company because you decided to quit or whatever happened. We still have access to those documents and we can sort of recover them and move them to another place. Electronis says, oh yeah, bridges. These numbers seem weird. Are there more on the bridges than online? One of the things to know is that, like, the bridge number doesn't reflect, like, how many connections are going through it. It just reflects how many like IP addresses and port combinations that the bridge has recorded in its, like, in its database. All the bridge does is sort of, like, create negotiation opportunities between hosts, and that means that each host and each user needs to basically say to the bridge, like, hi, I exist, if you want to talk to me, here's how you talk to me. And the bridge keeps that in a sort of, like, little database, and then when someone else goes, like, oh, how can I do that? Like, how can I do that? Like, and the bridge says, oh, you can do it like this. That's how the bridge works. Once all this, like, networking stuff that I'm currently dealing with is over and I get some free time, I will be overhauling all of the network information, wiki articles, etc., to cover learnings that we've made over the past few months that we've been working on sort of connectivity related matters. There's lots to talk about, including the surprise random feature that showed up today in a matter of hours called TCP connectivity. It's really cool, but it only works for like local connections. Anyone that remembers playing Red Alert 2 or any other sort of, like, StarCraft maybe game in the early days probably used something like Hamachi. Hamachi was effectively like a VPN client, really, and it allowed you to create a local area network over a WAN, and that would probably also work for this TCP connectivity. But yeah, I remember the days of Hamachi. It was like when I was a young person and I didn't have, like, control over my router. I get so angry if I don't have admin access to the router of the internet connection I use. So, like, if I'm in, like, a family member's house and the Wi-Fi is slow, I'm gonna just give me your router admin password. I'll fix it. I'll fix it. Please. It drives me mental. A master asks, I thought there would be some time loss using TCP versus UDP, waiting for the handshake from TCP. Please correct me if I'm wrong. we're not like moving forwards with it. One of the things that you need to remember with like our connectivity options is that we want to stack them in based of in order of priority, right? So I can't remember if Steam sockets are higher priority than LNL right now, but most people are still using LNL or Steam sockets, right? TCP connectivity is prioritized lower than those two. So it's really only if LNL and Steam sockets fail and you're on a TCP compatible network, which is one that doesn't have any NAT translation anywhere in it, will TCP be used. We don't imagine TCP to be used for any users of Resonite who aren't businesses, basically. It also was just written. I'm sure Frix did a very good job, but there's probably tweaks and enhancements that we can make to it as we go. I do remember as well that the WebSocket functionality, both for regular WebSocket connectivity and things like GigglePux or even OSC, that goes over WebSockets into Resonite, and that is TCP as well. WebSockets are TCP. Electronicist, I see a bunch of relays on the metric side, but only two of the settings of the game. Yeah, so the... I need to spend some time when I get it decommissioning some old relays. Currently, we've only got the Dash 2 relays up that are compatible with the new update. I need to take a look at the numbers, though, because last time I took a look at the older relays, there was still a bunch of people on them, so I hadn't prioritized decommissioning them. Once I decommission those, it'll fill back up to 4 or 5 relays, I think. Dre says, what does LNL stand for? It stands for Light Netlib. It doesn't really like mean anything. It's just the name of a library. OSC uses UDP? I thought OSC was over WebSockets. Never mind. GigglePox or OSC, which is UDP? Okay, just I retract my statement there. I'll go look at it when I'm less busy and figure out what I did wrong there. I swear OSC was WebSockets. Anyway, whatever. Okay, yeah, I think we're out of questions, so keep those questions coming whilst I control T our OSC support and remind myself of what the hell is going on with my brain. No, not OSC cheese. OSC receiver. Yeah, it is UDP. Well, I thought it was WebSockets. I don't know why. Anyway, if it was WebSockets, it would be TCP. So there you go. Yeah. There is overhead, but like there isn't. Mike Freak says like it shouldn't cause anything there. And when it comes to the scenarios that we're using it for, it's like the only option. So. Woo! Even if it was like the slowest option, if it's the only option that works, it's the best option. A master says, what other connections will be able in the future now that there's almost all the networking ways of connecting to Resonite? Well, we're looking to ENET before. I don't remember the rationale behind it, but like ENET networking was another one that we were going to like look into. Looks like ENET is UDP as well. Is it ZPL ENET? I think it's this one. I think we have a GitHub issue for it. Let me take a look. Do not dare show password screens. So I'm in like 3 or 4 remote desktops right now, and I have to like repeatedly alt tab to them to prevent them from timing out and giving me a password screen. Because ain't nobody got time for a password screen right now. All right. So the ZPL repo appears to be it's C. So ENET C# is the like C# version of that. There. That does use UDP though, and so for the purposes of our issues of networking connectivity right now, it probably wouldn't help because it's still UDP that we're having issues with. If we were going to be using ENET, it would be for the features that we would gain on top of or in difference to LNL. So like if they're, maybe it's better at window sizing, maybe it's better at synchronization, stuff like that. We'll have to revisit our like goal there because I don't know with the advancements we've made if it's still like cool, but it might be. Zenry says, if official engine reference assemblies are published, how much of the engine is currently documented? How long is a piece of string? Like I don't have the ability to give you an accurate answer there, so I don't want to give you an answer. It is always a goal to document more stuff. I don't know how useful reference assemblies or reference packages would be for you. They'll be useful for people like plugin creators, mod creators, and stuff like that. But for anyone actually using Resonite, it probably wouldn't be that useful. You did mention specifically plugin support, though, which it would help with. Spec says, following my main question, DMX. DMX is a light protocol for controlling lights. It's not for networking connectivity between sessions. Having said that, though, we could look into it. What's the other one? DMX? MIDI. Yeah, MIDI. Yeah, MIDI's another one. There's another one I'm trying to think of, but I don't know its name right now. It doesn't matter. List random protocols. I'll tell you if it's one that I can't remember the name of. We do need all the protocols. Speaking of that, I need to remember which side I am on. Okay, one connector, two. I got it. But yeah, keep those questions coming in. I'll get to them in just a moment once I hit Bitterin, German for join session or something. Yeah, I've been learning German. For context, one of the testing we're doing is on German machines, and I can change those machines to English easily, but I don't have time, so I'll do that when I do have time. Zenry says, one will be able to play with others over smoke signals. The smoke signals would actually be, it would be theoretically possible to do. You would just, you would interpret, the presence of smoke as, a one, and the lack of smoke as a zero. And then, I think they used to do it like a blanket. They'd, cover the fire to, separate the smoke or something. You just have to have a guy that is very, very, very fast at, waving a blanket in some smoke. Is it Terry Pratchett? I don't remember. Someone's going to help me out here. There's a TV show based on a book, I want to say Terry Pratchett, where they use a communication system. I think they called it clackers or something. It's basically like traffic lights. And depending on the adjustment of the lights, it means a certain symbol or whatever. And so each station just forwards it on. A bit like the beacons of Gondor from Lord of the Rings, etc. And one of the storylines in that show is someone figures out that if they send a well-crafted message, they can lock up the entire communication network by just sending an invalid, clacker pattern or something. If anyone knows what TV show that is, let me know. Otherwise, I'm going to imagine it, basically. I know it exists. I just don't remember what it's called. Let me just click Breton again, or however you pronounce it. I don't know. Okay, a Master Master asks, when are we going to get more header options for Protoflux nodes and networking? That one needs collections, and people don't grab your pitchforks, let me explain. The reason why it needs collections is because the only other way to do additional headers is to, manually provide some way of you specifying manual headers, right? So we could add something to the get protoflux node, for example, that would enable you to add a content type header or whatever other header you would mean, but it would have to be a static list of headers. We wouldn't be able to allow you to grab a arbitrarily long list of headers, which is what you want. You might want one or two headers now, and we could absolutely edit the node to support one or two headers. But the moment we do that, you would then start requesting other headers, at which point one of the engineers that we've got on our team would spend all their time adding additional header inputs to the get and post node, which is not a good use of our time. As for put, delete, all sorts of stuff like that. Again, we could add those, and we could add those quite quickly. But when it comes to put, for example, you usually need to put an object, and to put an object, you need to submit an object to a HTTP request, and that requires you to be able to interface with objects, which is collections again. Delete should be fine, because delete usually only returns a status code. It doesn't return a response body, and it doesn't take a request body. Yeah, collections day will be a nice holiday. I understand and I get that it's frustrating, but you'll remember how small the team is, how many things that we're working on, and the priority of those things. And unfortunately, putting time into something that we know is hacky is just not something we're prepared to do. Particularly because every time that we've done that historically, we end up regretting it. A good example being simple avatar protection. We used to basically continually edit simple avatar protection to have additional protections, and we've just got to the point where it's ridiculous now. It's this specific scenario gets around simple avatar protection, and it's yep, we know there's, we could patch that one, but you'd find another one 5 minutes down the line, and then one engineer would just be patching simple avatar protection all day. Sundry says, what about those flux nodes that can have an arbitrary number of inputs like multiplex? They aren't applicable in that scenario because, yeah, we could do like string inputs, like of a multi-string, but like, again, that's collections, right? What you're asking for is collections. You're like, oh, arbitrary number of headers, collections. You have to remember opportunity cost as well. Like, if I spent like a week adding, however that would work, like, the description you've given is perfectly fine. I don't know how that would work, like, literally until I take a look at it. But let's say I spend a week doing that. It would mean I would not spend a week doing something that would move us closer to getting collections. So that's that answer. Does collection have any prerequisites? Just, like, Zenru, I apologize for this, but, like, don't link a picture of a GitHub hyperlink to an issue. Just link the issue, please. That picture is incredibly useless. Okay, let me go see what 5.7.1 is. Thank you. It's just, yeah, so there's like this, I've literally read the title, like I'm not going to read any more details, but it's sort of like data model style stuff that needs to happen in Proloflux here. I'm here to tell you that I've got three copies of Resonite running, and they're all in their local home. And the local home music is like slightly delayed between all those three copies. And that's leading to sort of weird harmonies, and it's kind of relaxing. So I hope you're enjoying the thought of that. Just an offset, right? So you know the sort of like knocking sound? That's occurring at different times. I'm feeling horrible right now, but the reason is because the dog fell asleep on my lap. When dogs fall asleep, their temperature rises for some reason. And so they were basically like hot water bottling my lap in this heat. And I was just like, I'm going to pass out, dog. You got to get off. All right. Additional questions. Let's take a look. Do you know what the global value sync component is supposed to do? Let me go ahead and take a look at that one. Control T, global value. Do you mean global value T? I don't see a global value sync by that exact name. We got global value T. Let's see if this is used anywhere in code. Yeah, it's something to do with Protoflux. It's in the FrixEngine.protoflux namespace. It's something to do with Protoflux globals. Aaron says, is hot water bottle a British thing? Because I haven't heard that from anyone else. if it's really, really, really cold, historically, what did Americans do to warm up their bedroom? Knowing Americans, they probably just got, like, a canister of propane and detonated it above their bed. Like, you know, because America. But yeah, Brits, we have hot water bottles. It's just like, my bedroom's really cold. Let me just throw some propane in there, shoot it with a revolver. Done. Now it's warm in there. Hey, Master of Master says, how you been doing, though? I don't answer that question here. I can't answer it. I can't lie, basically. Jeb Forge says, what ID are you using? Well, I'm using Visual Studio. We could technically switch over to JetBrains. I know that we have Geens that really wants to. There's some prerequisites to doing that. One thing that kind of annoys me about JetBrains is that there's a paid version and a free version, and I don't understand the differences. I also think that there's some sort of licensing problems because we're doing like private work. There's lots of like tools for developers which are free and, you know, no charge to you, provided you're doing open source work. A good example there might be the Git client GitKraken, which is my favorite Git client. I have a t-shirt from the guys. But they made a controversial decision like a while back that if you were doing Git stuff in private repositories, as in repositories that are not open source, then you have to pay for it, which like, it's a fair thing, right? It's fair to say. It's just annoying. I don't mind Visual Studio. Like, I know other people hate it, but like I think like it gets a lot of flack because people use it maybe wrongly or haven't configured it correctly, etc. I don't know. Like, just it's perfectly fine. I could spend like forever worrying about what IDE I use, or I could just get on with work. I know what ID I'd want to use, but it doesn't exist, so I'd have to build it, and I don't have time to do that. All right, so world value sync is used in the session control dialog. It is, that's pretty much everywhere it's used. Everywhere it's used, there's a null. passed to the like second argument, which is interesting. Visual Studio is abysmally slow. I open the main FreaksEngine project, and then I always alt-tab and forget about it. It's one of those things where it's like, I might want to do some work on FreaksEngine in about half an hour. I should open it up and then get distracted for an hour and then go back to it and it'll be ready. We could improve that by splitting off the project a lot more. Like, lots of our C-sharp projects are within the same solution, which does slow things down a little bit. But again, we need to find time to do that properly or it becomes friction-y. All right, Nuki says... All right, so we got... Hang on a minute. We got a bunch of questions here. Yes, the world value thing, it's something to do with the session dialogue. I don't have a chance to, like... I can't articulate in words what it does, though. Exa says, can someone ask what the fuck Syro just did? What did Syro just do? Yeah, that's image corruption for you. So the very fact that, like, most of your computer works... and that you can see this Discord channel and hear my voice right now, it's a fluke. We like to pretend that it's like well-crafted software, and it is, right? You know, some smart people work on Discord, but there's still an element of like, it's just chance, really. Like, there are electrons like whizzing around on bits of metal, and what do? They allow me to talk to you guys about cheese. So when you're implementing new formats, particularly like images, textures, models, stuff like that, you sometimes end up with corruptness, which is what I think we're seeing there. People sometimes do that on purpose. Look for... Is it like Mario corruptions or something? Like, someone does it with Mario and it got quite funny. There's a bunch of videos there. Anyway, moving forwards. As a reminder, everything that a team member is working on is assigned to them. So if you go to Resonant Issues, look for assignee, and say it to whoever you would like to take a look at. You can see what they're assigned to. Fruks and I are assigned to a lot of stuff. Syro and Ryuvi are assigned to a little less stuff. But part of that reason is just like how long Fruks and I have been interacting with issues on a sort of assignment level. All right, let's jump back to... the next question. Nuki says, can you explain the different types of transparency in terms of how they might affect performance? You'll have to go to graphics office hours for that. I don't know. Nuki also asks, what would it take systems-wise to connect Resonate to the VR system on the fly during runtime instead of at startup? I don't know. I'd have to look into that. I think that's possible. I don't know why you're putting on your headset and then starting Resonate, though. Like, here's the pro gamer move, right? Turn on Steam VR, turn on your controllers, make sure the lights turn green, put the headset on the floor, start Resonite in VR mode, spend 3 hours in desktop mode before realizing that you had actually enabled VR mode, you just forgot to put the headset on. That's what I do most days. Like, the VR headset's just lying on the floor looking at me going, put me on, I'll work, you're in VR mode. I'm just like, yeah, I forgot, I'm sorry. Euphoria, do you foresee the client.NET 8 upgrade being more or less difficult? Incredibly difficult for the reasons I've previously mentioned. Unity cannot run .NET 8. There's probably a way to do it, but like it can't, right? So what we have to do is to try and get stuff off of Unity, which we're doing via source, or get parts of the engine off of Unity like we're doing the multiprocess architecture. Until both of those occur, some portion of Resonite is still going to be in Unity, which means some portion is still going to not be .NET 8. And that's why it's difficult. Like, you should view the .NET 8 upgrade for the graphical client as being months rather than weeks, which is what the headless... I think headless was days, but, like, you know what I mean? Like, it'll be months rather than however long it took to do the headless. I'm going to give a silly answer to Nuki's next question because I can't help myself, which says, what is Resonite doing during that long... loading screen at startup? It's loading. I mean, like, it's true. It is loading. If you want to see what it's doing, you can take a look at the log file. There's lots of information there. Some of it's useful to you guys, some of it's not useful to you guys, but it's all there and you can take a look at it. You'll see like numbers counting up. So I don't look at the numbers that much because I get kind of confused because sometimes like numbers are skipped, but it's just because I like can't see them because they're off the scroll or whatever. But like you'll see numbers counting up, and those are the like steps of initialization. They're in like square brackets. So 27, 28, 29, And then that log file is truncated. Great. This one isn't truncated. Excellent. 27, 28, 29, 30. Yeah, so you'll see when it gets to 30, you'll see initialization done. And that's when that loading screen goes away, or at least it should be. Sometimes I see an error message which says something along the lines of, like, please update phases to be 31, not 30, and I don't have time to look at that. Spec says, I see plenty of questions about what you're excited to work on. What issue do you dread working on? Exactly what I'm doing right now. It is like, literal hell. Don't worry about it, though. It's fine. We'll get it sorted. Dre says, do you guys have to wait for source in order to get Net8.0 onto the graphical client? As I've said, like, three or four times now, there are multiple portions to getting to .NET 8. There is the process architecture separation, which is going to be like the first part. That will put segments of Resonite onto separate processes that can run .NET 8 because they are separate processes. Until we get to source, though, some small portion of Unity of Resonite is going to be stuck on Unity until source. And then source will do like the final part. But do we need a pie chart? I can make a pie chart. I'm making a pie chart. I don't know why. It's been a weird day. I haven't had much sleep. It's difficult to, like don't quote me on these percentages, right? Because I just drew this with a paint tool in Paint. Here you go. Here's a shitty pie chart, right? Like there you go. Like, source, I put, like, slightly bigger. Again, don't quote me on the percentages. But, like, slightly bigger because, like, it will be doing... like all of the heavy lifting that Unity would be doing, and then multiprocess I've got like slightly less because it's a pie chart I drew in 30 seconds. Hopefully it helps though. So Moonbase says this would, when it comes to a live event, so this is the same for Twitch streams, YouTube video, like YouTube streams, like if it's live, always specify what this is because no one has any idea, right? The conversation's moving quickly. If you can clarify what this is, I can absolutely answer that. Until then, I've got no idea. You might be talking about source. You might be talking about my shitty pie chart. You might be talking about multiprocess. I don't know. Skrenna says, it's possible to eliminate the lag when grabbing something for the first time after launching Resonite. Yes. That is to do with the colliders not being pre-baked. We could pre-bake the colliders. I don't remember why we don't. Here's another follow-up. With the multi-process, will it be possible to do this long loading sequence separately as a preloader or something? When this kind of question comes up, it's really difficult because, like... The process of figuring out the answer to this question is doing the work. So, like, Frux is doing work to understand what is required for the multiprocess architecture, how it would work, etc. He's doing a bunch of research, looking into it, like how the processes communicate, how the process is managed, you know, what can we move to a process, all that sort of stuff. That's the work. And until the work, like, is done, I don't know. One of the things it will help with, though, in terms of crashes, which is something you put at the end there, is... if the Unity side crashes, then you're out of luck, right? But if one of the multi-processes crashes for some reason, we can probably recover from that in that case. Because we'll be like, oh, this process that's part of our multi-process system crashed, we can relaunch it. I don't know if that means like full recovery after a crash, but it means that at least Unity won't crash. Exo says, it's possible to boot with Scrainer without them crashing. I don't know, I haven't seen Scrainer in a while in Resonite. Ozzy says, what's the next prerequisite listed in the process-based architecture you guys are thinking of tackling? Particle system. We need to move as much stuff as possible out of Unity. And right now we're still using Unity's particle systems, which means that like it's still in Unity, which means that should we swap over to Source, Source would either have to write its own Unity-compatible particle system or would have to have our own particle system. And so Frux is making their own particle system. Okay, scrolling down... Ozzy says, is the media player part of Unity going to stay in Unity, or are the plans to integrate that with the Frux engine? We won't be able to use the Universal Media Player, UMP, because I believe that's Unity specific. We want to go to libvlc, at which point we could probably use that straight in Frux engine. That update, the libvlc update, has been like on and off for like months, and I get confused every time I look at it, so I don't know. Process-based architecture. Okay, so that's the Moonbase question. So process-based architecture would basically put something like Frux Engine in the files and stuff. Yeah, there'd probably be in like another executable. It might be called like Worker or something like that. Or it might just be called FruitsEngine.exe. That's the Chrome way of doing it, isn't it? Just like they're all just Chrome.exe. If you look at Steam, Steam does it a little bit better. You'll still see Steam.exe in a bunch of those, but you'll also see some Steam processes that have different names, and that's great, because it means we can understand what they're doing, rather than it just being Steam.exe 40 times. Like Steam Web Helper, that is a multi-process architecture kind of thing. It is part of Steam that is moved to a separate executable. Fruits has slaughtered my pie chart. But that's okay, because like, the pie chart isn't labeled. I can just make up what it means. So Freak says, the multiprocess is actually like 98% of the code base moving to .NET 8. I think my pie chart might be time. I don't know. Whatever, it's a shitty pie chart drawn in paint. We have the reasons for not pre-baking the colliders. There's not an... There's not an easy way to do that. It takes a fair bit to do it. It might just go away with other stuff, like moving to .NET 8, which means it might be a waste of time to spend on it. Fruits also said that we could potentially do both, as in, I think we're talking about recovery here. The main issue will be if the main broker process crashes. So that, yeah, there will be a broker process, and you can imagine the broker process is sort of like the post office or the mail center for Resonite, and it will sort of handle the communication and things like that. Venport says, I feel like office hours could do with a speech to text bot. There are recordings with full transcriptions and subtitles. I just haven't pushed the button to do it because corporate networks. Rexton, by the way, you're the last question because it's 1650. I love this kind of question as well. With the multi-process rework, does this mean performance will not be hit upon loading an item as the world can wait for even slow people to finish preloading then show an asset? That is not what causes the hit there. It's rarely assets that cause the hitches there. It's the data model that causes the hitches there. That will be improved by data model enhancements, some of which may be required for the process-based architecture. So we're all moving there. When it comes to these really, really, really big items, such as the multiprocess architecture, source, etc., it's less useful to ask about individual specifics right now. It will be when we get towards sort of more concreteness, when we start working on it in more detail, when we start testing it, getting more concrete will be good. But like keep like a level away from it right now and look at it like more generally. Like there hasn't been a single line of code written for a particular feature right now. And then like we can't answer questions about it. When we start writing code for it, we start doing the research, we'll have more answers. And with that, we're out of questions. So I'm going to go ahead and leave off here. I have to push a couple of buttons, and then I'm going to go grocery shopping, and I'm going to buy like a pint of ice cream, and I'm going to eat the entire thing in one sitting, and you can't stop me. I will speak to you guys next week. Bye-bye.